Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to start with review from last week. I know some of you were here and some were not. So we had a new Mishnah, which was about running in the public domain and your liability. And the new part of that was running, because we have previously been discussing walking, and running is unusual. And we found out that, it's okay to run on Erev Shabbat, which led us into a whole question, what does Erev Shabbat mean? When is twilight? And the rabbis call it Bein HaShmashot, between the suns. And that is the time from when the sun, the disk of the sun drops right below the horizon, which is Shkia, until you are able to see three medium stars, which is darkness. And that's the hazy area in between about when you can do things, finish doing things for the current day or start doing things for the new day. And that led us to Lecha Dodi, which is in the Talmud, which again, the song came 1,000 years later, but that was the source of it. So an unexpected non-tort result. Then another Mishnah about splitting wood, where you're splitting, someone's splitting wood and a chip flies off and kills a person. And what was new here was three domains. So they had three separate cases. One was public domain to private domain. One was private domain to public domain. And the last one was private domain to private domain. And in every one of these cases, the person chopping wood is liable, because you should have known better when you're using an axe to chop wood. That's dangerous. Which led to the carpenter's workshop, which ultimately became the blacksmith's workshop. But again, the chip flies off and it kills someone who's entering the shop. And the question is, the carpenter liable? And liable here means the right to go into exile. Which led us to a new category of unintentional bordering on intentional, or shogeg karov lemezid, which is an in-between category between intentional and unintentional, generally regarded as liable because you should have known better. And there were three examples of that. There were people who are giving lashes as corporal.
Heard a bad time.
Pardon me? Oh, that's Larry.
I don't know who you are.
So these are people who give lashes for the court.
Hang up.
People who throw rocks into the public domain.
Call me back.
And people who tear down walls. Larry, could you hit the mute button? Oh, there we go. And people who tear down walls, and the walls got a little hairy with whether you do it at night by a dump, whether people are relieving themselves, and or whether they are sitting by the dump. And finally, we had three responses to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, and he was the one all the way back with the carpenter who said that he should be exempt. That was last week. Now we move on into tonight's world of fun. Any questions, comments on that? No, here we go. Okay, so we start off with a new baraita, and we can tell by Tanu Rabbanan, the word taught. So our rabbis taught. Workers who come to demand their pay from a homeowner and the homeowner's ox gores them or his dog bites them and they die, he is exempt. Others say the workers have a right to demand their pay from the homeowner. So it's a pretty clear situation. And what we have is the disagreement between the first set of disputant is the rabbis, and they say the homeowner is exempt. Exempt from what? Exempt from kofar. So we've talked about that in the past. Kofar literally means ransom, and it's the money you pay to redeem yourself from an offense, which you can do in all cases except for murder. And then we have the second party, which are the others. And the others say you are not exempt. Now, what this really is a debate about the homeowner's responsibility, right? We have I always use this as an example of a baraita in real life. A man's home is his castle, or now we would say a person's home is their castle. But apparently not. It seems like in the Talmud world, if you have employees, they have a right to come to your house and demand wages. And therefore, you, the homeowner, have an obligation to protect them from harm. That's the root of the dispute here. And there's an interesting footnote. Rambam, Maimonides, rules that the homeowner is exempt. 400 years later, the Shulchan Aruch rules that the homeowner is liable and adds a note saying that if Rambam were ruling on it in his time, he would also rule with liable. He would change his mind. So let's go. The Talmud now wants to come up with a reasonable case where this is true. That's why we get the Chachei Dameh. What are the circumstances? So they're trying to come up with some case where the two parties would agree. So first we say, if he, the homeowner, or in this case, the employer, it's the same thing, is normally found in town, what is the reason of the others, right? If the homeowner is usually in a safe place away from his dangerous ox or dog, then the worker should have sought him out there. Under that circumstance, the employees have no right to enter his house without permission. But then we say to the other party, the rabbis, but if he's normally found at home, what is the reason of the Tana Kama? So if he's only found at home, then of course they have the right to come in and demand their wages. What else could they do? So we have the phrase here, Tana Kama, which literally means the first teacher. And the Tana Kama is a shorthand for who is the author of the Mishnah. That's what he's called, the Tana Kama, in this case. And the Tana Kama would exempt the homeowner. So this is the case. And now they're going to go down the lane with it. They're saying, is this really reasonable case to make that the man should have been in town? So no, that's not what the real reasonable case is. The reasonable case is regarding a man who can be found and cannot be found, which is a way of saying we don't know where the homeowner is at any given time. He might be in town at the pub, he might be in his house. So what the people do, the employees do, is they call to him at the gate and he says yes. Now, what does that mean? Nobody knows. So one party again holds that yes means come in, I mean, you can come into my property. And another rabbi says it means stay where you are, stand in your place. So the homeowner is sometimes at home. He says yes, we don't know what that means. Now, if he does say yes, and it means come on in, then he's liable for the death of the person. But if he says stay where you are, then obviously he's not liable. So we don't know what it means. So we have a baraita. It was taught in accordance with the one who says yes means stay in your place. A worker who comes to demand his pay from a homeowner and the homeowner's ox gores him or his dog bites him, he is exempt even if he entered with permission. So this is exactly the same text as we had back in the original Baraita, which is here, with the exception of even if he entered with permission. So on the face of this, it makes no sense, right? Because if the homeowner allowed the employee to come in, he should be liable if the employee gets hurt. So how do we understand this? So the Talmud will come along and redefine what yes means. And that's the question they asked. Am I patur? Why should he be exempt? Rather, is it not where they call to him at the gate and he says yes? Therefore, we assume backwards that yes must have meant don't come in, stay in your place. So it's ruling it the other way around. And this supports the first opinion in the original Baraita, which is the rabbis versus the others. End of that topic. We now move on to a new Mishnah. Now, this is a long Mishnah, and it looks slightly complicated, and it's really just an accounting Mishnah, and I broke it into two parts. So this Mishnah is talking about the ox that gores, a subject we haven't dealt with for a long time. And let's remember that there are two kinds of ox. There is the tam ox. Tam means innocent. And then there is the muad ox, which I translate as dangerous. It really means, the root word of muad is the word aid, which means to testify, to witness. A muad ox is an ox that people know to be dangerous. It's gored three times in the past. So what's the difference to the owner? The owner can't reasonably expect that the tam ox will do something bad, but the owner can expect that the muad ox will do something bad because he's known to be bad. It's like having a nasty dog. And therefore, the damages are doubled, which is really the basic takeaway here. If the tam ox hurts someone, you pay. Here are the excess of half damages, which we'll get to in a minute. But a muad ox, you pay full damages. And now, knowing that recipe, we can go through this list. And again, don't worry too much about it. I'll show you some pictures and it'll make a little more sense. So if you have a tam ox versus a tam ox and there's goring damage, the owner pays the excess of half damages. Half is the key word here. If they were both muad oxes, they pay full damages. What if you have a mixture? So a muad against a tam, you pay full damages. A tam against a muad, you pay half damages, which again goes by the ox that gores, whether it's a dangerous ox or not.
Steve, I'm probably just forgetting. What does it mean when it says excess of full damage, excess of half damage?
So you're gonna find that out in a minute. Okay. But really, it means you add the two values together and then you pay the bigger of the numbers. You'll see.
Okay.
Now we throw in people. So people are considered muad for everything. People are considered known to be dangerous, even if they're just good people, because the idea is ox don't know better, but people always know better that they shouldn't be doing damage. So if two people hurt each other, they pay full damages. A man against a muad ox or muad ox against a man, again, full damages, they're both full damage people. A man against a tam, so if the man is the aggressor, he pays full damages. The tam is the aggressor, he pays half damages. And here is the only dispute in the Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva says, even if a tam hurt a man, they pay full. Right? So all we have to worry about here is the very last piece of this. So if a tam ox gores a man, the Mishnah says he pays half damages. Rabbi Akiva says he pays full damages, and that's what the dispute is going to be like. Now we're going to get to the excess part. So we have a series of slides showing how this works, and the numbers aren't important. I just want you to see the thing of how it works. So let's imagine we have an ox worth $100 and an ox worth $50. And in this case, they're both tam. One ox attacks the other. So after they attack each other, they're each worth $30.
This is irregardless of who attacked who?
Well, no, in this case, it doesn't matter because they're both tam. It will be important when we keep doing this. So in this case, yes, because it's tam versus tam.
Okay.
When it's tam versus muad or muad versus tam, then it's different. So you have to assess the damages, right? So the $100 ox is now worth 30. That means it caused $70 of damage. And the $50 ox also is now worth 30. That means $20 of damage. So here's the key thing. How do you figure the amount owed? So you divide the damages in half. So the $70 damage you owe $35 for. the $20 damage you owe 10 for. Now, since both are involved, both get axed, what's the payout? You subtract the two, and it's $25. So the lesser ox would get, the $50 ox would get $25 as compensation for this whole thing. Right? That's Tom versus Tom. And here's where you see the half part, which is now makes more sense. So now we'll move on to the next case. And I haven't done every single case. So now we have the Muad versus the Muad, which is full damages. So once again, we have 150. Once again, they're each worth 30. Once again, the damages are $70 and $20. Now, as last time on the $70, the amount owed was 35 because it was half. Now it's full. So now it's owed $70. The other one owes $20, which means the poor person, the lesser person, now gets $50 payoff, whereas before it was $25 payoff. As I said, if you ever want to sit down and work through this, you can. It's not so important. I just want you to get the sense of how the numbers work. Next case. So here's the case where the Mu'ad attacks the Tom. And again, we have our same guys, same damage, same damages. But now, right, the first ox pays half because it's a Tom of damages. But the second ox pays full because it's a Mu'ad. And this time the payout is $15. It's the lower case.
In each case, the less valuable ox is getting the money. Just because the way the numbers work out.
Yes.
Which doesn't seem to be justice.
But they lost more proportionately.
Okay, I can buy that. Okay.
Wow. Glad you said that.
Okay, I can buy that.
Okay. So that's the Mu'ad versus Tom. Now we have the Tom versus Mu'ad, the opposite. Now you're getting the same numbers again, same damages. But again, when you do the calculation, now he's paying the full damage for the Mu'ad and half damages for the Tom. And this time he gets $60.
Oh, wait a minute. The Tom is worth $100. Shouldn't the Tom be half and the Mu'ad be full?
No, the Mu'ad is always full and the Tom is always half.
Right, but the way you have these diagrams, I'm assuming that the larger picture indicates the greater value.
So
you have the Tom, a value of 100 shekels. After the injury is worth 30, the damages are 70, but he's a Tom. Oh, so the Tom receives 70.
I'm just going to say, yeah. As I said, I didn't dwell too much on the numbers, making them come out exactly right.
Yeah, no, but I'm just trying to, because the way I understood the Mishnah, the Mu'ad would pay full damages.
Right. And the Tom pays half Mu'ad, damage.
Right, so the Mu'ad did 70 damages of 70. So he would pay the full price of 70. Okay.
Right.
I got it. Okay.
Okay. So one more example. This is why I know. So now we have the human versus the Tom. And the big difference here, and they actually do this, the human's value is no longer 100, it's 1,000 or it's 10,000. It's a big number. And here again, the human gets damaged. We have the damages. And now this is going to show you the dispute in the Mishnah between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Akiva. So in this case, we say the human is paying half damages. That's what the Mishnah said against the Tom. So the payout here would be $240. Rabbi Akiva would say the payout is full value, $500. So here the payout is $490. It's basically double. So that's the difference here with the human versus the animals. Basically, the human's worth more. And then once again, the dispute is, does the human pay half or full damages? That's really the question in front of us. Okay, so this is, we're done with the Mishnah and the exploration. We're now going to get to the Gemara. And before we get there, we're going to look at a proof text. So a proof text is a verse from the Torah that is used as support in whatever argument is coming. And we went through again all of these way back. So this is talking about the ox. And this is Exodus chapter 21, verse 31. Whether it has gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment, shall it be done to unto him. So I'm going to tell you now that the phrase that is going to interest us is, this judgment shall be done to him. Ki mishpat hazeh ye'aseh lo. Okay, now we're going to have one of these things I enjoy, which is I like to call rabbinic ping pong, where we're going to have the rabbis versus the other side, which we'll get to. Well, actually, we know in this case it's going to be Rabbi Akiva, since we're going back to the full versus half case. And we're just going to constantly have serve volley, rabbis, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva. So again, we have a baraita. Our rabbis taught, and now this is the piece we just saw. According to this judgment, shall it be done to him? So this is the rabbis now speaking, and they're trying to get at what is this strange phrase, according to this judgment, shall it be done to him? And it seems like this phrase is supporting the rabbis who are arguing half damages. Why? So in the judgment of ox to ox, so is the judgment of ox to human, right? They're equating the two. So when it's ox to ox, a tom pays half and a muad pays full. So by that logic, an ox to a human, tom pays half and a muad pays full. And that seems to make sense. That's the basis of the rabbis arguing the damages in the human case are only half. It's just a linear thing. Okay, now comes Rabbi Akiva's turn, and he's going to rely on other verses. Now, these verses are very close. It's all in one place about the oxes. So here we have two verses. If an ox gores a man or a woman that they die, the ox will be stoned. Its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be clear. So clear means doesn't owe anything, is not liable for it. But if the ox is wont to gore in time past, in other words, it's a muad ox, and a warning has been given to its owner, keep your ox in control, and he hasn't done so, and then it kills a man or a woman, the ox will be stoned to death, and the owner shall be put to death. That is what the verses in the Torah. So these two verses are going to be the basis of Rabbi Akiva's objection. Rabbi Akiva says, now remember, we're working on that phrase, according to this judgment shall it be done to him. And he says, it's like the lower and not like the upper. So what does that mean? It's terse always. It's like the lower, meaning the bottom verse, not the upper, meaning verse 28. Rabbi Akiva is saying this situation follows the second verse, verse 29, and we don't go back to verse 28, which is about the tom ox. Says, so he, that's what he's saying in this case. Now that's part one, is like the lower and not like the upper. And then he adds something. So what does it mean then? Right? Let's understand the argument a different way. And what he does is he's saying what this is really talking about is about paying from the best of his property. And again, we spent a lot of time on this right? That you had to reimburse the other party from the best of your fields, from your most valuable property, which I didn't quote here. And scripture says, shall it be done to him? He pays from the body and does not pay from the best of his property. In other words, we might have thought, since the Torah compares a muad ox that gores a person with a muad ox that gores an ox, just as in the latter case, the owner of the ox pays from the best of his property, so too should he do in the former case. And the Torah comes along and opposes this and says, shall be done to him. So in this case, the money owed is capped at the value of the injuring ox, which I know is a little complicated sounding, and we've done it a long time ago, so I'm not going to spend any more time on it right now. So ping pong. So that was Rabbi Akiva. Now back to the rabbis. So Rabbi Akiva, if that's what you said, then why does the verse have the word this in it? And we go back to the verse again. According to this judgment, Mishpat Hazeh. So remember, the rabbis don't differentiate between the tom ox that gores an ox or the tom ox that gores a person. In both cases, they say half damages. So what do they do with this word, this? Rabbi Akiva used it to prove that this meant the second of the two verses, the lower verse. So what the rabbis do is they use it to exempt him from the four payments. So they use this rule that the ox that damages a human does not pay the four personal injury payments, which are, again, pain, loss of work time, medical expenses, and humiliation. Those are the personal injury damages. So an ox isn't responsible for that. And this is how the rabbis would differentiate a tom ox that damages an ox versus a tom ox that damages a human. He doesn't have to pay those four payments. That's what the this is involved meaning. So now that the rabbis have taken that and said, really talking about the four payments, how does Rabbi Akiva fit that into his world? So how does he exempt someone from the four payments? And what he does is he pulls out another proof text, this time from Leviticus. When a man inflicts a wound on his fellow, which clearly means a man who inflicts a wound on a man, but not an ox that inflicts a wound on a man. So in Leviticus, you do have to pay the four payments because it's the person receiving the damage is a man, but here, because it's an ox, he says no. Rabbis, and the rabbis, the Rabbanan, if from that, I might have said only pain. So, back to this argument again about the damager being a man or an ox. So the rabbis would say that verse from Leviticus is only referring to payments for pain, but it doesn't refer to the other two things. And I don't know why the third thing isn't here. It doesn't refer to healing and loss of work. It's only coming to narrow it to that argument. So from this verse, we would know the owner of the ox does not pay this payment, but he would have to pay for healing and loss of work. Therefore, we need that word this to prove that the owner of the ox pays only damages. And that is the end of rabbinical ping pong, the end of this sugya. Okay, we're going to get a new Mishnah. And here is the proof text for this, which is all, again, coming from the same area. And if one man's ox hurt the ox of the neighbor that it dies, that means the ox dies, not the neighbor, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the price of it. And the carcass also they shall divide. So this, again, is going to be an illustration of half damages. So I have a long thing about this system of payment of damages. And it turns out that the system works when the oxes are of the same value. But when they're not the same value, we run into the problem. And I'm not going to give you all the numbers because it gets confusing. So here, now we're going to move to the Mishnah. If an ox worth 100 gores an ox worth 200, and the carcass is not worth anything, he takes the ox. He being the owner of the dead ox. So we have a case here where an ox worth 100 gores an ox worth 200. Actually, I just said it backwards. So that's what I'm saying. So the owner of the goring ox owes 100, which is half damages, but the carcass isn't worth anything. So the owner can just take, the owner of the dead ox can just take the live ox as a payment. Now, this case is significantly different than the case described in Exodus. The case we just had in Exodus was they divide the live ox and they divide the dead ox. Here they don't do that. They, in that case, they would sell the live ox, sell the dead ox, split the money. And there's no need for, and they just split the thing. But here, that doesn't happen. He just transfers the ox over. So we'll see why in a minute. It really has to do, again, with how we understand the verse in the Torah. So just for fun, I was wondering what an ox worth 100 means. So it turns out that in the time of the Mishnah, the average daily wage of a laborer was 4 dinars a day. So translating that into kind of rough today's numbers, that would make the value of the ox about $5,000. So it's kind of expensive. It's not a car, but it's also not a vase. Okay. So the Gemara starts asking this question, who's Mishnah? And their answer is, it sounds like Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because again, we have a dispute now. In this case, it's a dispute between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yishmael says, the ox, you bring the ox to the court, and the court assesses the value of the ox, and then that's how we know what to do. Now, again, we're talking about the case of the 100 and the 200 ox. Rabbi Akiva says, we don't do that. We just give the guy, the $200 man, the $100 ox, and everybody's even. They both lost 100. So where do they get this from? What's the source of their dispute? So in what do they disagree? So Rabbi Yishmael, who is a fourth generation Tana, holds that it is a creditor and that it is money he is claiming for him. So Rabbi Yishmael views the owner of the dead ox to be a creditor, that is a person who is owed money to the owner of the live ox. Theoretically, he could pay the debt any way he wants. It doesn't have to be just give him the cow, right? He could take the cash and then give him the cash if he wanted. But the easiest solution is just give over the cow. Yeah, I keep, cow and ox are the same thing in my world. Now, Rabbi Akiva claims something else. He says the two people involved in this are partners. And Rabbi Akiva is contemporaneous with Rabbi Yishmael, that if you look at the two ox owners as partners, the owner of the dead ox is owed $100. The live ox is worth $100. Take the ox. Don't bother me with court. Now, the second view, the Rabbi Akiva view, holds, it squares with the Mishnah's view, right? So therefore, the Gemara says the Mishnah is written by Rabbi Akiva. Now, how do they come up with these different ideas? And that's the next question the Gemara comes up with. and they disagree with regard to this verse. And we just saw the verse. And they shall sell the live ox and divide its value. So the fundamental question there is, who is this verse talking to? Rabbi Ishmael holds that God is talking to the court. That's the they in that sentence. And Rabbi Akiva holds that the merciful one, God, is talking to the two ox owners. And that's their they. So these are now the grounds of what's going to come next. And again, just to understand, to Rabbi Ishmael, the damaged person is a creditor and he's owed money. He doesn't own the animal. According to Rabbi Akiva, the damaged person owns the animal. So it's credit versus livestock. That's the fundamental difference here. So you may ask, what is between them? My benaihu, meaning what is the practical difference between them about who owns the ox? What are the real life consequences of looking at it from one view or the other? And one of them, at least, is consecration. So the consecration of the damaged is between them. So consecration is a practice from the Torah where you own something and you say, I am giving this to the temple, to the Beit HaMikdash. I am consecrating it. At which point, and we've talked about this in the past too, in effect, you don't really own it anymore, even if it's in your property. Like you have a flock of sheep and you walk and you point over, fill the sheep and you say, I consecrate Phil to the temple. So he's still living in your on your property, but he belongs to the temple and different laws apply to him. So here's the problem, right? According to Rabbi Akiva, the damaged person owns the live ox. And therefore, if he says then, okay, I dedicate the ox to the temple, that's valid. It's kosher. But Rabbi Ishmael would argue, he doesn't own the ox at this point. He only owns the value of the ox. And therefore, if he did a dedication, it would not be valid. So that's the practical difference here. So Rava asked Rav Nachman, if the damager sold, what according to Rabbi Ishmael? Since Rabbi Ishmael says he is a creditor and it is money he is claiming for him, is it sold? Or perhaps since it is leaned, and I didn't know of a better word to use, so I just copied that. Basically meaning he has a claim on it. The damaged person has a claim on it. He does not have. So what he's really asking here is, can the debt under Rabbi Ishmael's view where it's a creditor, can he really sell the ox? And Rabbi Nachman says he can't. The damaged party has a lien on the ox. So what I said a moment ago is not entirely accurate. According to Rabbi Ishmael, the creditor doesn't have anything except a claim, but the damaged party does have a debt, which puts him in a slightly different legal responsibility. He does have a legal claim on the ox, even if it's not clear exactly what it is. With that, we turn the metaphoric page to 33b, and now we get a baraita. But was it not taught, the Hatanya? If he sold it, is it sold? He can go back and collect from it. And since he may go back and collect from it, why then is it sold for plowing? So it's a little cryptic here. So this is teaching us that if the owner of the goring ox sells the ox, it is sold. And this is a difficulty against Rabbi Nachman, who just said, you can't do that because you don't own the ox. So Rabbi Nachman comes here to resolve this and says, even though it is sold, the damaged party, and that's the middle line, can still go back and collect the ox's payment. The ox is sold, in his view, in that the one who buys it can use it for plowing and need not reimburse the damaged party. It's like a free loan here. But when the damaged party wants to collect his debt, he goes to the court or whatever, he can take the ox. And even though there's been wear and tear on the ox. So the Talmud wants to learn a general rule from this case. The owner of the goring ox owes money to the damaged party, and there is a lien on his ox such that even if he sold it, the creditor, the damaged party, can collect the ox. From here, we could learn that this is true not just of ox, but of anything. He borrowed and sold movable goods. Movable goods is a category in the Talmud, which includes ox, which includes objects, which does not include land. And we spoke about that a long time ago. So they're saying basically, okay, we can apply the same rule to any movable, not just to ox. So the Talmud differentiates it. It is different there. Shani Hatam, for it is this as if he made it a designated payment. In the case of the ox, it's as if the owner designated it, and that's the word here, apotiki, which is a strange Greek word, as you can guess, which is when you designate something as payment. So in that case, the sale would not be valid. But if it's other movable objects, the sale would be valid. And that's what they're doing. And now that's going to be questioned. Rava said, and we also discussed this a long time ago. So what about if you make your slave an apotiki, a designated payment, and then you sell the slave, and then the debtor comes along and he wants his money back, he can collect it from him. He can take the slave back. But with an ox, the debtor can't come anymore and collect it from him. So Rava holds that the creditor can collect a slave because when people know when they sell their slave, it's a designated payment. The slave has a lot of value, right? Slaves are worth a lot. And so when someone essentially mortgages the slave, the matter will be known. Actually, I'm going ahead now. If someone buys the slave, he knows he's undertaking a risk that he could be called back at any time. People, the same is true with regard to the ox. People will know this is the ox that gored, and they should be wary of buying it. If they do so, nevertheless, it's buyer beware. And I think, yeah, I just went ahead a little bit, sorry. So they wanted to know the difference between a slave and an ox. And this was the reason that everybody knows the slave has been made a designated payment. So the response that Rava would come back with is, well, everyone knows the ox was mu'at. So it's really the same thing. So now we have Rabbi Tachlifa from the West. Now, remember, that means he's in Babylon. The other rabbis are in Israel, and the Babylonians are lower level rabbis. So he came from the West and taught before Rabbi Abahu. If he sold it, it is not sold. If he consecrated it, it is consecrated. So he's distinguishing between selling the ox, which is not effective, and consecrating the ox, which is effective. And the question now comes, whose opinion is he following? So the Gemara is going to try and figure that out. So just remember that these two things, he sold it, is not sold. If he consecrated, it is consecrated. And I'm going to give you the answer in advance so you don't go crazy. It's following both and neither. So if it's the damager, then if he sold it, it is not sold. That accords with Rabbi Akiva, who says the ox has been assigned, right? Again, the ox is owned by the damaged party. But if he dedicated his dedicated, would go with Rabbi Yishmael, who says that the value of the ox should be assessed by the court. Means the damager owns the ox. So both of these rulings are true. Yet Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael are disputants. So it's like the old Jewish joke, how can they both be right? So this is case one where we're saying it's the damager that's selling the ox. Case two, we say it's the damaged party is selling the ox. And now the situation flips. If he sold it, it is not sold, according to Rabbi Yishmael. Because Rabbi Yishmael would say, the damager owns the ox, so the sale is invalid, and that follows his ruling. But if he dedicated it, it is dedicated, goes with Rabbi Akiva, because he says the damager owns the ox. The damaged owns the ox, and this follows his ruling. So the problem with this is that it does not accord with Rabbi Yishmael or Rabbi Akiva, either way. So this Baraita rules like a mixture of the two of them. And you know the Talmud will not be happy with a ruling like this. And it says, and this is our last slide, it is indeed the damager. So it resolves this Baraita that accords with both rabbis. It decides the person who does own the ox is the damager. And everyone holds, if he sells it, it is not sold. Because even Rabbi Yishmael, right? Rabbi Akiva says that. Rabbi Yishmael says he has leaned, let's say it a different way, it gets confusing here. Rabbi Yishmael, who holds the owner of the ox, owes money, would agree that he can't sell the ox because of his debt. And that's similar to what Rabbi Nachman said above. If he dedicates it, it is dedicated, even according to Rabbi Akiva, because of Rabbi Abahu, for Rabbi Abahu said, decree, gezeira, lest they say consecration departs without redemption. So this is where we throw a little bit of the monkey wrench in. Rabbi Akiva would agree that the owner of the ox dedicated to the temple, the ox does need to be redeemed. Why? Because it would look like you could dedicate property and then you could undedicate it without it being formally redeemed. In other words, I dedicate my sheep to the temple. No, I changed my mind. I don't do that. You can't do that. You dedicate your sheep, you could buy it back from the temple, but once you've dedicated it, you've dedicated it. So the person who dedicated it would have to redeem it himself because he really was not allowed to redeem the animal because according to Rabbi Akiva, it is not his animal. And with that, Ad Kan, we are finished.
Yashar Koach.